the period of time that frost happens, of course, in Brazil, it's after the total development of beans. Mm-hmm. So if you already have beans, you're going to harvest as usual, but will affect the next seasons.
This episode is proudly brought to you by Mapper Forward's workshop, It's Time to Become a Coffee Consultant. Learn how to diversify your revenue streams and create freedom from your day job while saying goodbye to that alarm clock forever by becoming a consultant within the coffee industry or directly to consumers who have shifted towards home brewing and home roasting. Protect your income from challenging times in the coffee value chain by taking this course today. Go to mapperforward.coffee/workshops or click the link in the show notes for details. Welcome to the Daily Coffee Pro by Mapper Forward, friends. I'm your host, Lee Safar, and this is episode one of a brand new five-part series. And we are about to touch on a theme for this series that has gone a little bit, I guess it's been far too long since we had this conversation, and it is my absolute privilege to welcome Jonas Fijariso back to the podcast. Jonas, welcome to the podcast for I think the fourth or fifth or sixth or tenth time.
Yeah.
it's been too long since you were on the podcast. So welcome back to the podcast. We have, it has been too long since we had a conversation with you, and we want to pick up from the pandemic era and continue the conversations. So welcome back, sir.
Thank you so much, Lee. I think it's important.
Something like that. You're a regular, but it's just been a long time since you were a regular.
Yeah.
So in this series,
always great to be here.
It's always great to have you, sir. In this series, we're going to talk about Brazilian coffee in 2024 because there's a lot going on in the world of coffee. There's a lot that's broken in the world of coffee. People at the moment are like, you know, Lee, there's a lot of doom and gloom that we're talking about. Can you talk about things that are positive? Folks, we don't look at things as positive and negative. We don't look at things in that way. We're realists on this podcast. If everything was fantastic and rosy, we'd be talking about all the things that were fantastic and rosy. What we want to talk about is what's real and what's going on. One of our core values at Mapper Forward is authenticity and integrity. We will never rob you of that by ignoring what's really going on. And so in this series, we want to talk about picking up the conversation from what happened in 2020, which was the frost, which was the war in Ukraine and how that impacted things. We're going to talk about pricing. We're going to be talking about the reality for coffee producers in Brazil. Brazil being the number one producer of coffee in the world. You know, there's some serious things that are going on with regards to producers making some decisions based on this complex agricultural product being a viable option for them. And perhaps a succession plan that may never end up taking place on their farms. So Jonas is the man to talk about this with us on. Jonas, do you want to remind people, since it's been so long, what you do?
I'm a coffee agronomist. I work with Coffea Arabica, not with Robustas, because in Brazil we have Robustas chips, but they grow in different regions. And so I'm specialized in Coffea Arabica, and I assist small and medium farms in growing coffee. I started my career with specialty coffee, which I think was one of the solutions for small farmers to have some kind of profit outside of commodity market. But now I more focus on coffee with some kind of differentiation, which related to agroforest, organic, regenerative, agriculture, and all kinds of for me differentiation, which are related to more sustainable line of work. Mm-hmm. I still work with specialty, but in the last years, I think something changed in the specialty chain, which sometimes I do not agree so much. So I'm seeing that it's another way to the small farmers to earn money. So I started to understanding more and studying more related to these sustainable ways to grow coffee.
So you're not going to just get to say that you saw some things that you didn't agree with in specialty and we're going to move on. Come on. Tell me what that was.
Yes, it's always for me, since the beginning, the specialty coffee must be a way that the farmers should, a path that the farmers should walk, but not the final objective. So sometimes I saw people saying, okay, I have to do everything in order to have a specialty bean. But the specialty is the consequence of good work, not with something that you drive intensively in order to have that. Mm-hmm. When I put that point, for me, it's more related to the fermented coffee that was a trend. And a lot of coffee farmers tried to do that because the market wanted, but they changed the way that they used to work in order to do this, not the regular fermentation that usually Colombians do or Central America, but this, I saw you...
Co-fermented.
Yeah, yeah. And they were disappointed. The coffee tastes like crap. And the things that roasters and sometimes even people that do not buy coffee at all said, okay, do that or do that. And so for me, it's not the purpose of specialty.
Yep.
It's, you know, do the best coffee that you can do it, because some places they have their limitations, but this, it's not the main focus of that. And this included another part that me worries too. It's farmers start to growing old varieties with no breeding, like Geisha or Colombians back to grow Caturra, or in Brazil we people start to growing yellow bourbon. As the problem is not to grow that variety, but make that variety your main variety, which do not have resistance for drought or coffee leaf rust.
Yeah.
So farmers are taking more risks in order to follow the market. Specialty market, you know? And so that thing kind of disappointed me with the specialty market. I know it's not, it's hard to put the specialty market as a culprit. It's more related to trends and price. So customers want that, so you have to do it. And I know farmers are free to do what they want to do, but we go to the another point that farmers need to sell their beans. So if someone said, okay, this, I could pay you more money for that. So the farmers go there and try. And so it's because my kind of, I still work with specialty, with all my farmers, the agroforest, the regenerative, the organic, but we follow the good practice of post-harvest, in harvest, and drying. And then we saw, okay, the coffee is good. We could go to specialty. Okay, this year was not a good year, so I have to sell it for a different market and things like that. I think it's more, it's not reliable, more...
It's a more elastic. It's elastic and sustainable, right? So I want to ask you, how do you feel about the fact that there are roasters and other professionals on the consuming end of the market that are trying to influence and inform the way that coffee producers make decisions?
Yeah, this is, I think it's always when you have a business, someone are trying to say you're doing everything wrong. You have to change it.
I don't know you mean, Jonas.
No matter what kind of business you have, they still have a cafe or a podcast. Yeah,
correct.
No matter, always will be someone saying, okay, you're doing all wrong. Yeah. You have to follow this way. It's part of the market. It's part of all market. The problem is what a kind of support the farmers have to, you know, process that information.
Yeah.
And understand it's, I think when I say that is something that I put my profession on the line, like agronomists, should be the responsible for that. So the roasters, obviously, is someone goes there and said, okay, why you do not co-ferment your coffee? And then the correct line will be the farmers talk with the agronomists that are responsible for the farm and said, okay, someone tell me that. What do you think as a professional agronomist? And I will say, don't do that. Or if you want to do that, that some farmers approach me, the farmers that I assist, and obviously they said, I would like to try some different kind of fermentation. And I said, okay, let's do a very small batch. So you do kind of experimental thing, and then you see if it's easier, if you will find a market for that. So you test. And then if you like it, then we will try to find another ways to expand. We will find a roasters that take the risks with you. So, okay, you want that? So I need 20% of the money of the price. Yeah, like if I lost, we do a contract. So I take the risk, you take the risk, and I give you whatever you want. So, but we know it's not like that because many farmers do not have this kind of support. So they just listen, okay, you could earn money with that. So they go to there in order to experiment something that is still not a field of knowledge very well solidified in the science. We know that ferment coffee could bring some flavors, but it's not as easy as people think. It's very complicated. Maybe with your coffee not work well. Maybe with your climate do not work well. Maybe with this season do not work well. So there's a lot of risks involved. And so that is, I think, like I said, roaster and people always are giving tips in order to make you a better businessman. But I think it's the problem is related to how farmer could take that information and ask it to someone, or don't need to be agronomist, but maybe a technical support. Like in Colombia, they have FNC that gives some kind of support to the farmer. So they have some kind of support. But the idea in the core, I don't like too much, obviously.
I am with you, my friend. And in our last series with Kat Melheim, who I know you know well, you know, this is one of those scenarios where the roasters that are approaching the industry in what I think is the right way, she's I think, the best educator in the world in coffee. And she has that same kind of approach, like roasters need to stop telling producers what to be doing. And now listen, on that note, we want to talk about the frost in Brazil and what happened afterwards. So tell me, I mean, we've been a whole episode in now and we're going to now talk about what we wanted to come and talk to in this episode about. But that doesn't shock me. Our conversations usually go very long. So let's now start talking about the frost in Brazil. Remind people what happened, and then we can talk about what's happened now after it, because it was pretty devastating.
In 2020, we had a terrible frost that affects about, if not mistaken, about 200,000 or 300,000 of hectare of coffee in a different
different regions. Yeah.
And some places were worse, some places were mild, and so on. And in that time, a lot of traders and people outside of Brazil, and even some speculators in Brazil, said, okay, this is not something to worry. It's just in some places. And that surprises me because nobody knows the extension until a long time after the frost. And we are still facing the consequences of that because after the frost, we lost a lot of coffee. Farmers lost a lot of coffee in the next season because the period of time that frost happens, of course, in Brazil, it's after the total development of beans. So if you already have beans, you're going to harvest as usual, but will affect the next seasons. So 2, 3, and 4 years after that.
Wow.
And depending on the level of degradation that the coffee was impacted. So after that, a lot of farmers changed the way of growing coffee. I saw more movements related to agroforest systems in Brazil, because the agroforest system is a way to reduce the impacts of frost. So we use the trees over the coffee. And even the market changed a lot in terms of a viability of coffee.
Yeah. I don't know. Viability of coffee? Yeah.
Yeah, viability of coffee. Because I don't know if most of the customers know, but we have a stock. We harvest the coffee, but a lot of warehouses have a good volume of stock. So people do not feel as much as the impacts of frost in 1 year because we have stocks. And then the next year, even if we not harvest, then the amount of coffee that we are expected, we use the part the of this, the reserves, and then. But after the frost, worldwide roaster, big roasters, traders, warehouses are facing a problem that lower
reserves
to attend a market. So the frost changed that. And farmers stopped growing coffee in more risky areas. So the area that they have frost, they said, this is very risky to grow coffee here. Because if I plant that coffee again, will take 3 or 4 years to grow. And this is not a guarantee that we will not have frost in 2 years or 4 years. They're not, usually takes a time to have a frost. The last one was in 1994, if I'm not mistaken. But we know global climate is very complicated. And so it's not easy to predict that. And farmers know that. And so they stopped growing coffee in that area. And I do not see any movement of farmers changing the location of the area. Just they reduced the area and said, okay, I will stay with 80% of my area or 70% or things like that because it's more safer. I don't need to put a lot of the money to grow again. And I don't need to buy a new area and start it over again. So I saw that movement in these years.
And I suspect that given that the frost didn't happen just once in 2020, it didn't just happen twice in 2020. Mm-hmm. It happened three times, by the way.
Yeah.
Right, in 2020, which kind of, I'm sure, has a kind of impact on the psychology of the way that producers approach their risk appetite after that Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah, it's. I have a very small farm with my father too, but we are not affected by frost because our location. But I have many clients that were affected, and the farm was not mine. But when I get there, it's a very, very sad situation. I'm feeling like I need to cry to put everything out because it's so frustrating that you lost, the farmer lost everything, and I am as an advisor, I can do nothing to protect them. And so I feel very sad about them. And there are farmers that just starting to grow coffee. Like they put all the young trees on the field. It was like 86 or 87 months, and then they lost everything. So they need to start again. And we had a small frost even in the next year, 2021, but was smaller. But some farmers, that farmer that I said to you that have a seven month seedlings on the field that was affected in 2020, he replanted in 2021, and then they had it reached by the frost again.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so the second time. And then we replant in 2022, but we start the agroforest system there.
Okay.
Because I said to him, it's a very risky area, but he wants to grow coffee. It's there that he have. So there is no option to sell it and buy in different places. It's not like sell a car. Because some people think, so, okay, sell this farm and buy another one. It's not easy. First, because if you have frost, who gonna buy this with a very risk of frosty? Second, usually farmers have a huge bound with the
crops.
The crops and the area by itself, because usually his family or her family grow there, so all the childhood were there.
Community.
His father, he met. Yeah, it's a bound with the ground, the area, the community. So it's not just about business. Always, I said that there is some farmers that grow coffee for business, but even in Brazil that have huge farms, we have about 70% of farmers that were medium and small with less than 20 hectares. So 30% just is a huge areas. So these farmers have a bound with the community. They need to make money, of course, because they will need to pay the bills. But it's related to that. So they want to grow coffee there because it's important to him. In this case, to prosper there. So it's a challenge, but we are trying the third time now to grow coffee there.
And for people who perhaps didn't get across what was happening at the time, when Jonas is talking about the level of damage was different, I remember when it was unfolding, and you came on the podcast a couple of times around that time to help us understand what was going on. The extent went from like burnt leaves and, you know, just completely, all the foliage was completely decimated, all the way to the other extreme, which was that the roots were frozen because the frost was so intense that the soil froze. For all intents and purposes, and not only did the trees have to be stumped, some of them had to be pulled out of the ground because they were no longer viable. So the damage was it went from bad to super bad, and so if we were to sum up what the damage has been post the frost, has the industry in Brazil recovered, or is it still reaping the, or is it still trying to recover from that?
I think after that we have some how can I say that? Like incentives from the government. Mm-hmm. So farmers let that borrow money for banks. They could postpone
the repayments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the repayments. So they have deals between farmers because they need the coffee mm-hmm. to pay the bills, but they will not have at least in the next year. So most of the farmers that I talked to, they do not go bankruptcy. They mm-hmm. have a bad situation for like 3 years, and then they could start it over again. The one of the things that changed it, it's related to price to the customer in mm-hmm. the supermarket. But frost was one of the factors. There is another one that affected that. And this impact was, how can I say that? Fueled by the industry a little bit. Mm-hmm. Of course, they do not... they need to reduce their profit, the percentage by pack, because customer will not pay a lot of money for a traditional low quality coffee. But the offer of coffee was bad, like today, for example. We still facing that problem in Brazil. I don't know if worldwide is like that. Like good Arabica, bad Arabica, and Canephora Robusta are almost the same price.
It's wild.
In the domestic market. Yeah, it's wild. It's very close. Usually, like Robustas in Brazil is half price of Arabicas. And low quality coffee is kind of the same. But mm-hmm. we are talking about by bag to $20, like $30 cheaper than good quality Arabica. I'm not saying high-end quality Arabica.
We're like talking commercial grade, but good commercial grade.
Yeah, like commodity standard quality Arabica. And this is interesting. It's because it's looking like the industry needs all kind of coffee they have available to do their blends. So they are buying everything, no matter quality, and no matter what kind of coffee you have, they're paying almost the same price. This is bad for Arabica, 100%. Mostly. Like, yeah, because farmers that do Arabica, you know, in Brazil, Robusta, we have a technology to grow Robusta that Robusta could, for instance, a regular Arabica could reach 90 bags of coffee, 80 in very, very good conditions per hectare in mm-hmm. Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
If we are talking about Robustas, there are farmers that harvest more than 200 bags per hectare.
So it's a yield game, right?
Yeah, that's why usually it's half price, because it's double. So Arabica farmers said, in Arabicas, needs a lot of work after the harvesting that Canephoras usually don't need. I know we could drink a very high quality Canephoras too, but farmers in Arabica are kind of, my costs are getting higher and Canephoras are bad quality coffee too, like bad quality Arabica. So why I do a specialty or regular coffee if I do in a so much cheaper way, and traders or roasters or warehouses are paying the same price. So it's affecting, I think, the quality, even the specialty coffee chain in Brazil.
You know, when I speak to green coffee buyers at the moment and green coffee traders, their warehouses are full of 84, 85, 86, all the way up. They're full of those. Mm-hmm. They can't sell them.
Mm-hmm.
But you're almost paying the same price for an 81, 82, 83 as you are paying for an 84, 85 at the moment, mm-hmm. because that's all everybody wants. That's all mm-hmm. everybody can afford.
Mm-hmm.
And the warehouses don't have any of it in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's, we are in a very special, strange, scary time, in my opinion, with regards to supply.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think a situation like this causes more and more people to start buying commercial grade coffee and putting it into a bag that's called specialty grade coffee, right? Mm-hmm. Which has long-term ramifications for everybody. And it presents a lot more challenges for producers. And I think this is the mm-hmm. best point for us to end this episode mm-hmm. because in the next episode, folks, we're going to be talking about what the greatest challenges are for Brazilian coffee producers post-frost, post the war in Ukraine. And we'll talk about geopolitics in a further future episode of this series. But we really need to talk about pricing and what the actual challenges are that are going to impact the direction that coffee goes for the number one coffee producing country in the world. So stay tuned for what is definitely going to be a very interesting conversation. Peace, love, and peanut butter. Have an amazing rest of your day. I really hope you enjoyed this episode, friends. Please don't forget to show us some love by subscribing, liking, commenting, and most of all, sharing this podcast with your friends. Check the show notes for links, including our sponsors and our Patreon. And stay tuned for more great conversations on The Daily Coffee Pro by Mapper Forward.